Hi, you are listening to a free Majority Report. If you would like to become a member, please go to majority.fm.
Yeah, say
your name. Oh, my name's Janine Garofalo. How are you?
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, January 4th, 2013. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. It's the first casual Friday of 2013, ladies and gentlemen. Picking up from where we left off last year, today on the program, IMF's big mea culpa on austerity. Who knew? New Congress sworn in yesterday, and they've actually now are referring to themselves as Quongress. And for the first time in, I think, certainly in history, the Democratic caucus does not have a majority of white men. Also, we'll pick up the Violence Against Women Act is, for the first time in 18 years, no longer in effect. Auto sales, highest they've been in any given month last month since 2007. And the march towards marginalizing what's left of any type of liberal impulses in the Democratic Party is on as the political elite march towards cutting your Social Security benefits. I know. What's old is new again. We pick right up in 2013. And on the program today, of course, we'll be talking to our old friend from 2012, Cliff Schechter. And also giving a movie selection today will be David Cross, the comedian. We'll see. We'll see about that. But first, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to be talking to the wonderful Cliff Schechter. We are back, Sam Cedar on the Majority Report, and in just a moment we will get to Cliff Schechter, but I want to remind you that this program continues to exist because of the support of our members. We get 98.73% of our revenue from members, and it's really the only way that we continue. We're going to upgrade our video in the coming weeks. We are hoping to get an app so that you can listen to us on your iPhone or on your Galaxy 3S, your Droid phone, whatever kind of phone you have, all of that. And we can only do it with your support. So you can go today to majority.fm/become a member. And there you can become a member for just pennies a day. Support this program. In addition, you get the extra 50 minutes, sometimes an hour. I've been going long lately for members. And as we see the contraction of some of the other progressive outlets, your support becomes all the more important. And how else could you hear on Fridays Cliff Schechter? And before you do, how else could you hear this Cliff Schechter theme song?
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC, New Media, Public Relations, and Strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we just had a little sound garble, apparently, from Cliff, and so we're calling him right back, and we'll see.
Hello.
Hello, Cliff. Do I sound good to you?
Sounds a little better. Still a little garble, but we'll do our best.
All right. Well, if you have a problem hearing me, tell me, and hopefully we'll get a couple of new members so we can upgrade our sound equipment.
Yeah, come on, guys. Let's do it.
Do I still sound bad? I don't know why that is.
I don't know either. I mean, I'm at least right now I'm getting what you're saying. It's sort of a little garbled, a little drawn out, but you know, we can make that work.
Okay. Well, tell me if it improves or gets worse as we go.
Okay.
I mean, that's sort of indicative of 2013 starting off. Let's before we get to the fiscal deal. Or whatever it is that we're calling it, because we still apparently have a cliff facing us or slope or whatever.
It will never go away, will it?
Let's talk about this whole Sandy thing, because this has been stunning. Apparently today they've now managed to pass in the House $9 billion, I guess 15% of what has been requested and was passed via the Senate. And I guess this has to go back to the Senate now to just get that $9 billion. This came after Chris Christie got up there and surprise, surprise, realized that there was a cold indifference to suffering by the Republican Party. And Mumbles King from Long Island, you know, taking time off from his chasing the Muslim Brotherhood, threw a fit and then came back and said, actually, Boehner's a really good guy.
Yeah, well, you know, he's ticked off because there are some non-Muslimy poor people who are in his district and could affect his political future that he cares about. I actually just wrote a column on the whole thing because it's sort of amazing to me. It kind of ties into the stuff that I've written about, you know, when you see sort of someone like Wayne LaPierre frothing at the mouth, like he did on TV on the gun stuff, how these guys, unless they actually are ever sort of victimized by something, it seems that really the definition of a conservative is as long as it's happening to somebody else, it's okay. Right. And you know, that's exactly right. I mean, Peter King, he just, you know, I love the line. I mean, I'm glad, you know, his righteous fury at the Republicans, obviously they deserved it, but a little bit rich coming from him. I mean, it's amazing to sort of sit there and listen to him, you know, talk about leaving people out, and you know, I think he said leaving people freezing and hungry. Those aren't Republican values. And my response was, actually, that is
right.
I mean, that's. I think that's on your party platform.
Well, you know, the amazing thing is that, you know, Christie also, you know, had this whole thing about how, you know, it's. We shouldn't try and we shouldn't, you know, make people who have suffered innocently pay the price. But, you know, somehow as if it's a natural disaster, is somehow sort of separated out from something like was hit by a car or got cancer or simply was born into a situation of not of their own making. I mean, there's plenty of other instances. You know, even if you have to maintain this notion of, well, if you made a mistake when you were 25 and took the wrong career path and didn't go to college or did or took the wrong major and you end up having no Social Security, you know, no retirement fund when you, that's your problem. If you never bought health insurance, that's your problem. But even if you filter that part out, there's still a whole wide array of people who theoretically you would hope would be considered innocent victims in some respect.
Yeah, well, this goes back to sort of the oldest kind of what's the right way to put it? The oldest kind of demarcation, segregation. I'm not sure what the right word is. Of our republic, which is the deserving poor versus the undeserving poor. And for whatever reason, the Republican definition of it is sort of the, I mean, we know, I guess, what the reason is. What they've become is, of course, the most right-wing, insane definition where they, where it's sort of fused with hatred and paranoia and resentment, where they always assume if it's anybody different than them, that whoever it is the undeserving poor.
Right.
You know, I mean, the people who cheered, you know, when Ron Paul essentially said if some guy on a motorcycle crashed in his 30s and didn't have health insurance, we should let him die by the side of the road. You know what I mean? I mean, that's sort of – that's the mentality. And I mean, even though I was glad that Chris Christie did the right thing when the hurricane hit too, I had the same reaction when that was going on, when that whole thing was going on, which is he was so angry about, oh, my God, these people and the devastation I've seen. Well, why don't you go to some of the rural areas and inner city areas and other places where there's devastation because of the policies that you and your friends support all the time? You know, why doesn't Peter King take a look back through his voting record? Which if you do, you will find there was a great piece, I can't remember who it was by, Daily Coast the other day, listing all the times he's voted against supplemental, you know, nutritional bills and all sorts of other things for kids to not – I mean, is it better when kids go to sleep at night hungry because of the family they were born into?
Right.
That's not just as offensive as someone who gets hit by a hurricane. It's sort of the it fits very well with the opposite side of that too, which you have a bunch of these goofy, either, you know, got lucky and became billionaires because they lucked into it or because they were lucked into the family they were born into, kind of like every one of the Republican Party's most recent nominees, who somehow think they earned it. That's the opposite side of it. Well, I mean, obviously it was their genius that did it.
Right.
It wasn't the Romney name or the McCain name or the Bush name that did it. It was just their unbelievably stunning genius that got them to where they are. And that's what's so sort of offensive about all of this. And you know, I was, it was related to this. I was reading this piece in The Hill about Senator Mark Kirk from Illinois, who people may, you know, be familiar with his case. And he's okay. He's a little bit, as Republicans go, he's probably the most moderate Republican in the Senate and was one of the more moderate ones in the House. But again, you have to think of what you're comparing that to. He still has voted for plenty of bad bills, has excluded and discriminated against plenty of people, has ignored plenty of people, didn't obviously support, didn't support Obamacare. And it was all about, you know, he had a stroke. He's only, I think, in his mid-40s, late-40s, and he had a stroke and has spent most of the last year recuperating. Mm-hmm. First of all, the guy's damn lucky he has a job where he keeps getting paid when he has a stroke for a year.
Yeah, there's not many other jobs where you can take that year leave, basically, not show up.
Not many others, meaning none.
Right.
Right? I mean, so he gets to do that, keep his full benefits, all the stuff that people in the private sector have asked for and these guys block forever. But taking that aside, he actually came out now, and again, I'll give him a little credit the way I give Peter King a little credit, and I could give Chris Christie a little credit. But if you don't look at the broader issue, he came out and he said, well, now, you know, I understand, you know, I have more of an understanding of the problems with Medicaid and, I mean, with the rehabilitation I had to go through to come back from this stroke. You know, Medicaid would have only paid for 11 rehabilitation sessions, and I wouldn't be anywhere close to where I am today if I only could have had that. And it's like, good, I'm glad you realized that, but why did it have to happen to you for you to realize that? I mean, don't you people read books? Don't you live in this world? Don't you see things, learn about things? I mean, can you only understand different people's plights if you actually experience them yourselves? Does the hurricane have to hit you? Do you have to have a stroke? Do your kids have to be shot in high school before you become people that understand that these issues affect people we need, and the government has a role in protecting, as it says in the Constitution, for the general welfare? You know, what does it take? And that, I mean, that to me, this is like, to sum it up, this is being conservative.
Yeah, goes beyond, too, I think, just, you know, look, I can't understand the plight of a whole myriad of people in our society. But it really is a fundamental decision whether or not you're going to give other human beings the benefit of the doubt. You're ultimately going to say, you know, this notion of like, look, I don't know what it feels like to have a decreased job opportunities because of the color of my skin. I don't know what it is, or because of my gender, let's say, or I don't know what it is to have certain disadvantages because of the area code I was born in or the zip code I was born in. I don't know what it's like to have disadvantages because my parents were not educated, it's quite possible there are some people in some areas that are gaming the system, but at the end of the day, I've got to make a decision. Am I going to give those people the benefit of the doubt and say, I'm willing to allow for some people who, you know, who willfully made bad decisions or are, you know, trying to get away with getting more food stamps instead of working, whatever it is, whatever those fantasies are that right wingers have. But give the benefit of the doubt to the majority of those people who are in a situation that I really can't imagine and say, you know, they're deserving of help. That is the point of society, is to help those people.
Right. And that's sort of the key thing is, no, I mean, there are certain things that until they happen to you, you can't 100% know what that's like. I'm not saying you can and I can, but also I think it's having a broad enough sort of understanding of the world, a broad enough interest in the world and interest in people to look around and say, you know, this kind of thing could happen to me, could have happened to me. I'm not special. You know, I'm not some person that was ordained to be born and lucky in my current circumstances. You know, that this could have happened to me before, and frankly, it could happen to me tomorrow. You know, and it's also being able to look at other people that have fallen into these circumstances due to no fault of their own, or at least to go into it with the assumption that it was not their fault.
I'm not
claiming there's nobody out there that abuses welfare. I'm not claiming there's nobody out there, you know, that are bad people that want government assistance. But I would tell you that, frankly, yeah, actually, I know there are a lot of bad people out there that want government assistance. They're called the defense industry, Wall Street,
right.
All sorts of people. But, you know, the pittance that maybe the few people, and I've run into them, frankly, I've run into people who I know who are happy, you know, along the way here and there, like, yeah, I'll just take that government money and do whatever with it. But when you compare that to the broad number of people that money helps, to sit there and sort of say that, to act like those few, the exception, are the rule, is sickening, frankly.
You also have to have a concept that your perspective and your life is not indicative of everyone else's life, and that your perspective is limited by the fact that you're only you've lived a specific life. I mean, that's what seems to be there seems to be some type of a mental block there for these people. I mean, to the extent that they're being sincere, you know. I guess if, you know, a guy like Kirk can come back from this and say, well, I have a new perspective on things. Well, that's fine. But, you know, why did you assume that your perspective was so rock solid before? And you know, that element there, okay, that notion leads me to talk about the next thing as we sort of like segue into the that fiscal deal and more importantly, what's coming up next. And, you know, what has driven me crazy, and I think a listener sent this to me. I don't know if she sent it to me via Twitter or through majorityreporters@gmail.com. But this Jonathan Alter piece, and it just is, it drives me crazy.
Well, you know, first of all, you know, Alter is a cancer survivor.
Yes.
And so he somehow can't take that experience and say, what would it be like to not have health insurance? What would his life be like?
Well, you know, the funny thing is, though, is that I think that, like, you know, his health insurance, maybe that's why his big blind side is in Social Security as opposed to maybe things like Medicare. And, you know, I have had numerous exchanges with Jonathan Alter in green rooms over the years about Social Security. And a year or two ago, he was talking about, you gotta raise the age, why not? And we had an extended email exchange where I said, well, you know, the problem is that you keep talking about life expectancy has gone up, but the fact is it's only gone up for people in the upper income distribution. And frankly, I'm also not quite sure that life expectancy gone up hasn't been a function of Social Security and Medicare to some degree. You know, all of the justifications of why we can cut Social Security, that wealthy people, and it's wealthy people who say this. There are no, you know, I have yet to see anyone who is in the middle income, one of the bottom three income quintiles. In other words, 60% of the country who has ever advocated for cuts in Social Security. You just do not see it because they know how important it is to them. We're talking about 60% of the country relying on Social Security for over 50% of their income in their retirement.
That's right. And there's a few other important things to this. And I'll just say quickly, because I told you, I'd tell you that for like the last 5 to 10 minutes, I'm able to hear perfectly, Sam. So whatever it is, it's gone away. There's a few things here. First of all, when these guys toss around the figures about life expectancy, what they leave out is most of that life expectancy gain has come from infant mortality going down because coming up with all sorts of ways to prevent things like polio.
If you measure it from age 65, there's been very little of a gain.
That's exactly right. If you made it to a certain age, I think that age was 20 or 18, I don't remember what it was, then you were going to – that those gains above those ages have been virtually non-existent. I mean, yeah, they exist, but they're not – you know, they're almost non-existent. And so it's infant mortality going down. So it's not – that's one thing. Second of all, it's an arrogance about the type of money you make, but it's also an arrogance about your occupation. Because the truth is that Jonathan Alter, you know, and you and I have this luxury too, if we're lucky. And again, I'm still smart enough to know that, knock on wood, something like what happened to Mark Kirk could happen to any of us any day. But likely, if that doesn't happen, people like you and me, the types of jobs we do, we could probably do well into our 70s. All right. Jonathan Alter can keep writing his columns and his books and whatever. It's not backbreaking labor. It's not construction. It's not something that really you're at the age of 60, 65, you're having a damn hard time doing it anymore without your body falling apart.
Right.
So there's a bias in that, too. It's that for those of us who are lucky enough to work behind a desk, you know, or, you know, and to be able to talk for a living and write for a living and do things like that. You know, chances are we're going to be able to do that a lot longer and not have to rely on Social Security and be able to do it on our own schedule. You know, we do a little bit of this, a little bit of that, supplement your income when you need to. So that is a huge thing he's missing. And obviously, the income level is a big part of it, as you said. I mean, I almost in my own imagination, I sit here and I picture when they were figuring out where the tax cutoff was going to be. The people like Jonathan Alder were sitting in the room and like, you know, with their various income streams were like, well, I make $425, so let's keep that tax rate above, you know, it's like that zone of where most like most of the guys who are Washington pundits who get on TV a lot and write their columns and write their books, that kind of income level, you know, the $250 to $450, I suspect a lot of them fall in there.
Right.
And so that was the perfect place. You're gonna extend those tax cuts. That was a good place to extend them, you know?
Right. And of course they're hanging out chasing people who are making millions of dollars, so they perceive themselves as cash strapped.
That's right.
Making 300 grand a year. I can barely send three of my kids to $40,000 a year private school.
That's exactly right.
I'm not really worried
about food, but sending the three kids to private school and having the swimming lessons and, you know, everything else is going to strap you a little bit. And I'm not trying to say that I think people that make $250,000 a year are in the same league as people that make $10 million a year. I've argued before, and I've said that earlier, that I think those should be separate tax brackets, and that I would argue for bringing back the what I would call the Reagan first term tax bracket.
Right.
I think it should be 50% for people making above, whatever it might be, a couple million dollars. Because, yeah, they do make much more money than people making 250, who also make much more money than people who make 50. And so I do think there should be some sort of a differentiation. But the people that that get me, people like Alter, that don't see doesn't see below him any differentiation. Oh, they'd be okay without their Social Security. They're doing just fine, like me.
Now, as I'm specifically referring to because we've seen there is. I mean, it's fascinating to me that there is a section of the center left, supposedly, that immediately after the fiscal cliff deal, and we'll talk about that. We'll analyze that a little bit too. Have come out and basically said, "Now here come the liberals." Who are all complaining, and they don't realize either that the president won, whatever that means, and they better not interfere with his ability to cut entitlements, come the debt ceiling fight. Let me read a little bit from Alter's thing here, because people should hear this. I mean, he starts it off. You can already hear the rumbling in the distance. A train
with an Alter-esque affectation. Too.
Unbelievable. Yeah. A train of noisy liberal Democrats barreling straight for the White House. I think at this point, we're talking about maybe a small school bus. Never mind a train of those people, but the president already has his hands full dealing with angry and unrealistic Republicans. Now he's getting reacquainted with their counterparts on the left, a less ideologically inflexible bunch, but not necessarily any more susceptible to reason. And, this is just like...
Can I say something else quickly? Because this is important to me.
Please.
I'm offended as a writer. I mean... People pay this guy to write. Like, if you go through this column, and I'm sorry, I know, me being a little bit obnoxious here. But, man, when you read someone like, Charlie Pierce or Matt Taibbi or some people who can actually write, and then you read this stuff with every cliche, with every sort of, every sort of BS phrase. Hey, as Will Rogers said, the Democrats are, I'm not part of an organized party. I'm a Democrat. I mean, could you write any lazier than this guy? Okay, I'll get off that.
He goes on and he says, he begrudgingly says, liberals did keep their mouths shut during the 2012 election. To make sure that they didn't help Romney, but here they come again. They came dangerously close to derailing landmark health care reform for what they had been fighting since the Progressive Bull Moose Party Convention of 1912. All right, well, good for him. He knows some Reader's Digest history here.
He repeats it without actually understanding, because what that 1912 Bull Moose platform called for was for universal single-payer. Healthcare.
Well,
so this would be a little different. I'm not saying that Obamacare, in my opinion, is not much better than having nothing. It is.
I'm giving you one of these for that. That was a touche. I don't know if you heard that, but
that was nice.
I would take umbrage at his recent history because the bill wasn't in danger because of liberals. The bill was in danger because of people like him, like people like Joe Lieberman. The bill was in danger because of people like Max Baucus and Conrad. Yeah. This was not it wasn't liberals, holding up this bill to the extent that there was any chance that this wasn't going to pass. It was the Blue Dog Democrats and the so-called centrists who were holding this up. If we had had, you know, a 55-year-old buy-in for Medicare, like Joe Lieberman supported back when he, when the insurance companies were saying, hey, we don't have a sustainable business model. Can you get some of our older people onto Medicare? And so we'll have just, you know, people from 25 to 55 to insure. Then we can work this out. Those were the people who endangered the Affordable Care Act at the end of the day. But leaving that aside, he goes on to talk about why liberals were upset with the fiscal cliff deal. It was because it went from 250 to 450, and they complained that he violated
also known as at least one extra vacation a year for the Alter family.
Right, exactly. They put an extra $6,000 in our pockets, and they were upset because he compromised. I want to get your take on this fiscal cliff thing, but the biggest. The biggest failure, in my estimation, about that deal that President Obama made was that it was unnecessarily made when it was made. Look, at the end of the day, the difference between 250 and 450, I'm less concerned with that at the end of the day than I am that you never made the Republicans pay a price. The one thing that he touts in this is that the one achievement of the fiscal cliff deal was that it violated the Hastert rule. Which is the Dennis Hastert rule that required a majority of the majority Republican caucus to proceed on legislation. First off, they
That was a Republican rule. What do I care about that?
Who cares? They can reinstate it tomorrow if they want to. It's not a real rule. No one cares. It doesn't hurt them politically at all. If it did, we would have seen we wouldn't see Speaker Boehner today. It would
this is such a classic Washington piece. I mean, basically, procedure was upset, even though this is a thing that was put in place by Republicans during Hastert. It was a Republican decision to do it, not Democrats. So I don't even understand the relevance of it. Who the hell cares?
Right.
But procedure was upset and shared sacrifice, and liberals are complaining like conservatives, and they're both extremists, and share, you know, and all that crap. And in the end, what this comes down to is that, you know, people who are whether they're on the left or you can call them populist, working class people or whoever it is who are pissed off about this are pissed off about it for a reason. Because if you're on the wealthy side, you have to give up a little bit. You have to give up a little bit. That's versus people that may be giving up food and medication, which people like Jonathan Alter can't seem to freaking understand. And, I mean, so when he acts like, oh, it's just the liberals complaining, it, just, it gets me so mad when I read that crap. Because it's like, oh, it's just them complaining because they want to, you know, get their pound of flesh like conservatives. No, maybe I actually care about people not dying. Could it be that?
And then he segues into bragging about the demise of the Hastert rule or maybe the temporary suspension of it or whatever. I mean, honestly, I think there are more implications to the Republicans coming in, taking over the House and making sure that all the cups were styrofoam again. That has actual more implications in the world than the Hastert rule. But then he just moves from there. Sort of, and it's a complete non-segue. Now, and this is what's important about this piece. If there is any writer out there of this ilk that has a closer relationship with the White House, I don't know who it is.
Right? I mean, that's what this is about. He'll defend them to the end. He wrote that fawning book about them.
Yes, and it's not just a question of defending them. I mean, look, he has his sources, and he very well may believe this stuff that he writes. I'm sure he does. But the fact of the matter is he has those sources because those sources trust him to carry a certain amount of water for the Obama administration. Now, I'm not saying there's a quid pro quo here. It's just that like-minded people can tend to gather together. And so they're
simpatico. Sam, it's also culture, too. Often it's a situation where it's sort of in Washington where there are expectations from certain people that you do certain things, kind of like in a corporate setting, the same thing. And often something doesn't need to be said. It's kind of like when you work at a newspaper and you want to report on something terrible. Nobody has to tell you not to do it because you look around and you see what people are talking about and doing above you, and you just kind of know not to do it. Well, in this case, it may not be an actual quid pro quo, but it doesn't have to be. He wants access to the White House. He probably wants to write another book or two on Obama. And, you know, he's internalized what he needs to do to get that done.
Right. And so then he segues literally from the achievement of the fiscal cliff deal. This is the only one that he refers to, incidentally. I mean, aside from the fact that supposedly we got Republicans to raise taxes. No, Republicans didn't raise taxes. Unless you say that when they made the sunset provision on the Bush tax cuts that they raised taxes, because Republicans didn't raise taxes. When this deal was voted upon, the moment anybody took a vote on this, not when the handshake was, but when the moment the deal was voted upon, taxes were already up on everybody. They were right up on everybody. And because President Obama didn't let it be very clear, you don't even have the political advantage of saying that these 151 Republicans in the House who voted against this were voting against the tax cut. And
right. that's my issue. I mean, you asked before, and I didn't really, you know, we got off on talking, still talking about Alter, which is important. But my take on this whole deal, again, is exactly like yours. I don't really – the difference between 250 and 450 is not a huge deal to me because, again, in our economy right now, my thoughts are that people in the 250 to 450 range probably still spend some money, and having some more money in their pockets probably isn't the worst thing in the world. It's really how we got there that is my problem. My problem is that any deal that should have been made, first of all, should not have allowed for that obscene estate tax exemption, which now is what? I guess up to $5
million. $5 million
for an individual. $5 million per spouse. So it's $10 million per couple.
Yep.
And 40%, you know, as opposed to going back up to what it was before. Was it 50 or 55?
55
so
after
that,
a million.
That was obscene. They didn't touch the carried interest loophole. I mean, that's the most obscene thing sitting there.
And dividends.
I mean,
dividends is also the big
thing. People are legally avoiding paying their taxes, and we're not doing anything about it.
Right. Dividends was also a very big deal in my estimation.
And then I would throw in those things were much more offensive to me than the 250 to 450, where, again, I think that there could be a justification made for wanting some people in that.
And here's the thing,
sort of
you have the leverage.
More.
You wait a couple of days, you have the leverage, you offer bills that basically provide for the same tax cut, even if you want to do it at the 450 level, and you put on there, you include in those bills these type of provisions, not just on things like dividends and whatnot, but also provisions of like, the debt ceiling provision or
that's
the sequester.
That was what I was going to get to. The provision that we're not going through this crap with the debt ceiling again.
Or
we're not letting you nihilistic imbeciles take this country hostage.
Or you punt the sequester stuff, because that's supposedly where the line of demarcation is going to be put. And I say that only because of what Alter writes and what we keep hearing over and over again. The president is committed to not forsaking the executive power to pay the government's bills. But, you know, when it comes to the sequester, that's another thing. So he basically goes from the Hastert rule to, just as Republicans must learn to live with tax increases, Democrats must learn to live with and vote for changes in entitlements. Now, by changes.
Right. So what he's saying, let's be clear, just as Republicans must learn to live with people who are rich being taxed a little bit more, Democrats must learn to live with people not living.
Right. Well,
I mean, that's really what we're talking about here.
But you know what?
We're talking about people dying.
Republicans don't have to learn to live with tax increases, and they didn't have to vote for it. They didn't. 150, the majority of the Republican caucus, three times the members of the Republican caucus voted against. And it wasn't even, they weren't even voting for a tax increase. They were voting for a tax cut. They wouldn't even do that. And so he's misstating the reality.
You wait a couple of days, you offer them up to 450, you throw in the debt ceiling. Hell, I would take it off the table for the rest of his entire term. Tie it to a tax cut up to 450. Don't raise, if you want to give them a little something else, fine. Capital gains maybe doesn't go up to 28. We'll put it up to 25. Give them some scraps of what would be tax cuts, you know, lower it from 20. I mean, I'm not saying I want that, but I'm saying you could give them a lot less, a lot fewer things and get everything you want if you'd waited.
Yes.
That's what I'm saying. And I'm not saying I have the perfect formula of what everything is. I would have been willing to go up to 450, you know, if that was what it took to get the debt ceiling off the table, protect all earned benefit programs without being touched, get the estate tax back up to a reasonable place to be. I mean, I even would be willing, as I said, I'll give them a point or two cut in the capital gains tax if that would get it done too. You know, I'd give them little things that to me aren't as big in the big picture. But we didn't do that.
No.
So, there
and
you
so
go.
Now,
and so,
Now we're being told, we're being scolded, that liberals got to stand back and allow the president to cut entitlements.
Yeah. I mean, we don't want to be difficult or anything, or actually advocate for things we believe in. Or, again, to get this out of the point of abstraction to where it is, stop people from dying. Because I guess I'm just going to have to keep repeating that, because I'm not going to let this shared sacrifice garbage get through there. Because in the end, somebody giving up a pair of yacht slippers, or, you know, only staying at the 5-star hotel in the Bahamas for 6 days instead of 7, is not the equivalent in the end of somebody who may say to themselves, I can only have 2 meals today. And it's different.
And what's stunning to me is just sort of like, you know, what is, even if this is what his perspective is, where is the problem? What is it that liberals will derail by arguing against a cut in entitlements? What, I mean, what is it exactly? What's the danger here? Like, why is it necessary for this scold? I mean, we're being sold this in such an intense way. And, you know, and what is, you know, like, I can understand the argument of, like, you know, you don't want to empower Mitt Romney. You don't want Mitt Romney to become president. What is the danger now? There's nothing. I mean, this is exactly what President Obama supposedly wants. Make me do it, you know. But, I mean, this is what sort of like rips off the veneer and the lies of these people. It's like, don't get in the way of our agenda is what they're saying. They're not saying you're going to empower anything else.
But, yeah, and I would say quickly, you know, when it comes to people say we've got no leverage over Obama anymore and that kind of thing, and I disagree with that. I think you have, obviously you've got leverage over congressmen and senators who have to run for re-election.
Yes.
But I do. One thing that's very clear to me about President Obama is that he cares deeply about his legacy. And I don't know who it is, which group of us or whatever, but the truth is, when you think of the people you have on your show and you think of places from the various blogs, think tanks on the left and things, I mean, I'm not saying we have what we should have, TV networks, although we're losing one of those, and things of that sort, people that can shape opinion. You know, I think people should make it pretty clear to this guy that we're going to do some early writing on his legacy. He cut Social Security and Medicare.
Yeah, I mean, I think the more pushback that this type of stuff gets now in the next 2 months as these deals are being formulated, the better.
And I think people should make it clear. You know, we're going to be a large part of what defines your legacy. It's not just going to be Jonathan Alter.
Yeah.
There are plenty of people, progressives, in places, you know, in various places, from MSNBC to Sam Cedar's radio show to the wonderful We Act Radio, everyone, to, you know, various places that those of us write for. I mean, their blogs, their mainstream publications. This isn't 1995 anymore. It's not even 2000 anymore. It's a different time. And what you know, what people like us say actually gets out there. And I, you know, how much, I don't know, but I'd be willing to make the case to President Obama. We'll take it out for a spin. He wants to see how his legacy does. If he wants to be known as the guy who destroyed FDR's legacy, I'd be happy to brand him with that if he tries cutting
earned benefits. I still believe that the real pressure points that we have now are in the Senate and in the House. I mean, you know, I think it's
obviously much more. Yes, I'm not saying that what we have with Obama is equal. I'm just saying I don't accept we have zero leverage with him. That's all I'm saying.
Well,
but I agree. The Senate and the House is obvious, and there's a number of senators. You brought up one of them earlier, Max Baucus, up for re-election in 2 years. You want to ever prove you're willing to? I don't like using this phrase in light of recent events, but willing to shoot a hostage? You know, willing to take somebody out on your own side? I think a hell of a nominee would be Max Baucus for that.
Yeah, I agree. I think there has to be. I think we have.
He's
to
up
very
in a tough state to win in 2014.
Very aggressive, and the thing is that there's room to lose a couple of Democratic senators. Definitely,
that's right.
There's definitely we've got a little bit of that leeway. All right, well, Cliff,
maybe we can get the former lieutenant governor Halter, I think his name was, who ran against. Our friend, what the hell is her name? Help me out here, Sam. I'm losing my mind.
What's her
Blanche
name?
Lincoln.
Blanche Lincoln.
Well, Mark Pryor's coming up in 2014. Maybe Halter's in the mood for another run.
Yep.
I'm just saying he was a legitimate guy who came within, what, 1 percentage point? 2?
Uh-huh.
I don't remember anymore. Came pretty close to knocking her off. I'm just saying there's people out there, you know, who can run against some of these guys who are up in 2014. And I think we should make it clear we'd be willing to support him.
Cliff, Happy New Year. Glad you can join us again in 2013.
No, this is like my third or fourth year or something weird like that. Third year, probably.
Second.
Probably
second.
Third calendar year.
That's right.
But,
I think that's true.
So I'm feeling good about that. Sam, keep doing good work, and thanks for having me on.
All right, Cliff. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you next
week.
Have
a great week, buddy.
You too. All right, bye. Folks. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, David Cross will be joining us to hopefully give me a movie recommendation right after this. We are back, ladies and gentlemen. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. On the phone with us now, the recently betrothed David Cross. David?
I can't. What is that?
Oh,
that
it's,
noise.
It's
what
the...
is that? Is that the soundtrack to Lincoln? What is that?
That is...
What is that?
I splurged. I got a small wedding trio. To play Here Comes the Bride. Is that what that's officially called? Here Comes the Bride? Well, David, Happy New Year.
I'm glad to see you're employing, I don't want to say disabled, but disadvantaged people. they're not disabled, but they are at a slight disadvantage. Not a huge one, and that's not a pun on the word slight, but I'm. It's nice that you're hiring...
Are you talking about the soundboard guy?
No, I was talking about, didn't you say you got a short trio of,
Well, we have a very small space here. And so, short and thin was basically the requirement. And then I just said, whatever.
Fine. I mean, whether it's out of necessity or just a kind of a generous, from your heart kind of thing. It doesn't matter. The end result is you're employing people that might not necessarily get employed, without a little extra help. So,
right.
I appreciate it. As a member of the family of man.
Well, I'm glad you appreciate it's nice to get a little bit of thanks for some of those small things that people don't notice. But, David, congratulations. You're now a married man.
Yes, I am. I don't know why I get congratulated, because it's not an accomplishment.
Well, you did marry up a little bit.
When I go on stage and I go, and I just, you have to reference your wife at some point I have bits or anecdotes where I used to say girlfriend, now I say wife, and then people applaud, and I
people applaud you just for having a wife?
It's not a fucking accomplishment.
Well, I mean, it depends. I think, like in your case, it is. I mean, it is. I wouldn't have necessarily bet that you'd be able to marry. Certainly, I think you did marry up a little bit. I mean, wouldn't you?
Yeah. No, for sure.
How's it feel? It's been a couple of months. Now, I should say that Chuck Sklar and I were not there. at the wedding.
Is Chuck in your studio now?
No. No, I just mentioned Chuck didn't come to my wedding, and that has been a long time. He won't talk to me anymore. But Chuck and I were not there. Carl Perry and Chuck and I hung out.
Well, look, the only reason I am talking to you is because I was at your wedding.
That's right. How does it feel? It's been, 3 months now, right? 2 or 3 months?
Yeah.
Has it gone downhill yet?
I imagine it's similar for me that I don't think I'm experiencing anything anybody hasn't experienced or it definitely there's in one very real sense nothing has changed, and in another sense you are there's that feeling it's like
a numbness.
But like an oily sheen that you can't get off.
Yeah.
And you try scrubbing, but it doesn't come off. And it's good for your skin, for sure, but it's not a pleasant sensation, but it's also very minor.
Right.
And you just continue with your life.
Yeah. Well, yeah. After
I think I speak for everybody.
After a while, that gets a little bit, it gets a little sticky. It starts to get a little sticky.
Then you get used to it, and you just live with it, and you adapt.
Is something inside you just slowly, sort of fades away?
No, I honestly, there's not a whole lot of difference, but just that consciousness of, I'm married, I have these obligations, and there's
honey-do lists.
Yes, I'm a big fan of repressed sexual comedy from the 50s. So any of those comments are always really funny.
Wait, what is that?
Like
what
my nagging mother-in-law.
You know what? You're just not. You haven't been married long enough. That's the problem.
I suppose so. Because I'm still enjoying it. Is that what you're implying?
Yeah. and those jokes don't make sense to you. You think they're artifacts, but after a while, you start to realize, like, oh my god.
I should be doing this interview with Nikki.
What's that? Yeah. Well, fortunately, she doesn't listen to the show. She stopped listening to the show like a long time ago.
And that's what keeps the marriage alive.
Yes, just barely hanging on by a thread. So she's. Do you have a kid yet, or what?
No.
Oh, all right.
Yet.
We're expecting. We're having another.
Oh, really?
Kid. Yes.
Oh well, congratulations. Yeah. That is an accomplishment.
Yeah, it is. Well, not necessarily the actual.
But man, so far apart. It was that planned, or?
You know, what does that mean? Planned. What does planned mean?
You know exactly what it means. You consciously attempt to create a child.
Cool. It depends on what level of consciousness you're talking about.
I'm not talking about the 7 seconds before you're like, I need to pull out. Oh, well, this is too good. Well, whatever. We'll have a kid.
It's almost as if you were in the room. If you added Ambien into that mix,
an Ambien, well, then it's not your kid. You're never going to get it up with an Ambien.
If you added Ambien into that mix, you would have captured the spirit to a certain extent. But we're very on balance happy. Myla is very, very happy. She's super.
I'm sure she is. There's a playmate for a little while.
Yeah. Well, really, actually, she's just going to be a babysitter, a low cost babysitter.
Right.
That was part of the plan. I would recommend going down that route because. Babysitting costs are crazy. What else? What's going on? I know that apparently Kung Fu Panda 3 is in the hopper.
Is it? I don't really hear about these things. Are you on Deadline Hollywood or something?
We did a little bit of research, and 2016. Apparently, Kung Fu Panda 3 is coming down the pike, dude.
Is that for real?
Well, that's what Michael, isn't that what That's what I had my peeps.
IMDb. On IMDb, but they had the arrested thing up there for like 8 years, so I don't really trust them. But that'd be great. It means that I know that I'll be getting at least a little bit of money within the next 3 years.
Right. That's those things are a huge payday. Panda threes.
Well, they're not initially, at least not for me, but then they tend to do well, and you get bonuses and residuals, so that's good. The actual, first.
You don't have a merchandising deal? You don't get any of the merch?
No, I do not. I'm not at that level.
What's going on with Arrested Development? Did you guys shoot them already?
They are, for the most part, shot. I know that I have to be careful what I say. I've done a couple interviews, and I get not yelled at, but somebody will call me and go, no, we don't want to say that yet. But I think it's general knowledge that we are going to – that the initial order of 10 episodes has expanded. We shot past our original
– Did we just break a story?
Oh.
Did we just get breaking news?
No, not at all.
All right.
I think I prefaced that with, I believe it's general knowledge. So that would mean it's not breaking news. It might be breaking news in your basement in that tiny town you're in upstate New York, but no,
I'm in the city, dude.
Are you really?
Yeah.
Oh, are you living back here?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I thought you were upstate.
No.
Oh, okay. Well, then how come we haven't hung out?
Because I'm married. You see?
you brought it
Don't have
back.
A kid. Don't have a kid. Don't
brought
have a kid.
It around.
Don't have a kid. Don't have a kid. Are the shows good?
I haven't seen them cut together, but the scripts are great. It's a very... Yeah.
Cross, kept in the dark. Is that,
That's not news. That's not a fact. It's an opinion.
Oh,
I don't know if you can really.
Well, you know how it is.
Grandiose music.
You know how
opinion.
It's going with the media these days, dude. There's no difference. There's no difference between.
Right.
I can't wait to. I'm gonna. This whole thing is gonna be on that Deadline Hollywood site. It's gonna be huge.
Again, I'm not saying anything that isn't known, but yeah. Well, there'll be. I'm not exactly sure. Because they're not sure when the release will be, because there's a lot of posts to do.
But that's great that they're going to do more than 10. I mean, that's a great. That's basically indicative of things went well.
Yeah. Oh no. I think it's going to be really great. And what they are doing is unprecedented. It hasn't really been done in where they have. Everyone's episode intertwines with other people, but they're all their own individual episodes. And because of the Netflix model, all the episodes will appear at once. But there's no set way you need to watch them. So everyone's experience will be different based on which episodes they watch when. There's no linear chronological thing that you have to worry about. Obviously everybody's episode has flashbacks and flash forwards, and it starts there's a point of getting back to where the story ended and season the end of season three, but it takes you forward, and then everybody kind of gets to this certain point in their stories and the date, I guess, which could potentially lead to a movie that would start from that point forward. But you can watch.
That's
there's no 1 through 14. In other words, it would be you can watch 7, 9, 3, 12, 14, 1, 6, and you would. There's no out of order sequencing, so it's going to be an interesting, depending on how you choose to watch it, everybody will have a different experience, because you'll see one scene shot from one angle and then in another person's episode, you'll see that same scene kind of extended or shot from a different angle, so
their
different
POV.
Information is given.
That's fascinating. But, that's actually genuinely fascinating, because
I don't think it's ever been done.
Well, I mean, it's because it is because of the Netflix, because it's time shifting. It's all time shifted. It's all on demand. It allows for a different way of consuming it, and that's, I think it's the first time.
Well,
I mean,
but it's also the storytelling. I mean, I can give you a box set of, you know, The Wire or Breaking Bad or Battlestar Galactica, and if you watch episode, you know, season 2, episode 4, you're not going to understand things on any of those stories. But if you watch, you know, episode 8 of the quote season unquote 4 of Arrested Development, it'll have no bearing on, you're not going to miss anything. You don't have to watch 1 through 14. There is no 1 through 14. I mean, they're sequenced, just for the sake of, you know, being able to understand everything and
make sure that you've watched all of them.
Who are programming and you call it this one's called this. And, but there's no
chronological order in which they have to be consumed.
And you'll have a different experience based on how you watch those episodes. It's pretty cool.
That is pretty cool. Oh, that's pretty exciting, and I haven't heard that anywhere. This is almost like an exclusive.
Cue up your music.
Hold on for a second. Here we go.
Sam's really pulling for something exclusive here.
This is big. We need more exclusives. That was one of the things that we did a big market research, and we found that in 2013, we need more exclusives. That was one of the big things that so I've been trying to push for those. This year so far has
mm-hmm.
been going.
How are you doing? It's day four.
We came back on the second anyways. So we're nothing's broken quite yet.
Okay, good.
But, you know, it's hope springs eternal, right? I mean, come on. Well, that's good. I mean, that sounds actually really interesting. It's a fascinating way to do it. And, wow, that's really groundbreaking in a way. Although I would also say The Wire, you could start any season, I think, probably, more than most shows. They really sort of reset it in some respects, but I don't think that counts as an exclusive, the fact that I pointed that out. So I don't know if that's really going to get me anywhere with that. And what's Kill Your Darlings? Are you playing... did you ever play Ginsburg? Didn't you play Ginsburg in some movie?
I did. I played Allen Ginsburg in I'm Not There, the Todd Haynes film that's loosely but basically about Dylan.
Oh, right. Okay. But you're not playing actually Allen Ginsburg in Kill Your Darlings, are you?
No, I play his father, oddly enough.
Wow, buddy.
Yeah, Times Daniel have changed, Radcliffe huh? plays Allen Ginsberg, and I play Lewis Ginsberg.
Have you seen that movie? Is it good?
I haven't seen it. I did some ADR for it a couple weeks ago, so I saw a couple scenes. I hope it's good. It was a rough shoot. I am not in it a whole lot, but I know that. It was very, very, very low budget and kind of a tough shoot for a lot of people. And I know Daniel got sick. They were pushing him pretty hard. But, again, it was a lot to shoot and a little bit of days with no money. But, you know, it looks like it should be good. It's a great cast, really good cast.
Well, there's some buzz about it here in the office. Well,
no, it should be good. I'm looking forward to it. Fascinating story I was surprised that I had never heard of it before, because it's so crazy and it's all true. And
what is the story? Just tell us, because I don't know much about it.
Well, briefly, it's Allen Ginsberg goes to his freshman year in college. He goes to Columbia, and he meets and he meets William S. Burroughs and Jack Kerouac, amongst other people. But they become friends. I had no idea that they were like kids. They were teenagers. They're like 18, 19 years old. And then one of these guys, it's when, you know, Alan starts coming out and he gets introduced to a number of things that that still happen to this day, where you're a freshman in college, you leave home, and you're introduced to, you know, the underground nightlife and drugs and homosexuality and all kinds of shit, you know, in the city. And but one of their friends, kind of almost like the charming leader of this group, kills a guy. This is all real. And kills a guy and covers up his, and they all know about it, and covers up his death. And then sort of says that he, there was a real law in the books then when he gets caught, and saying he was gay and he came onto him. And that was actually a legitimate way you could get away with murder.
Jesus.
Believe it or not, back in the 50s. Yeah, it's such a crazy story. I mean, the crazy part to me is, like, all these icons, these really important people in American culture, were all hanging out in a dorm room, you know? I never knew that. And that there was a murder involved.
I didn't know about that murder. I never heard that story, I don't think.
Yeah, well, it became the basis for Ginsberg's and the I'm butchering the title, but and the hippos will be boiled in their tanks, I think, is or some variation on that. That's it, but it's a crazy, crazy story, and you can't believe that there is this. It's not just these three people. You know, 18-year-olds meeting in a hotel lobby and going their own way. They all hung out and did all these crazy things together, and I never knew that. And then they went their separate ways. But there was a semester where they were doing all kinds of crazy things and becoming who they eventually would become.
Interesting. Well, that sounds – I mean, it definitely sounds interesting. Maybe I'll – well, I don't see movies as they come out in the theaters anymore, but maybe I'll see it on Netflix.
Take a kid. Huh? Take a kid.
You know, Myla, here's the weird thing. Myla, I think she's only been to one movie. She gets very nervous about anything that's going to be sad or scary. So, like, literally, last weekend, Nikki
so you,
and I,
you just go take her to This Is 40?
All, yeah, exactly. I just said, basically, to Judd Apatow movies. She loves Judd Apatow movies.
Sure.
We watched E.T. with her, and we had to really convince her to watch it. And she cried hysterically during it. It was so sad when they may get E.T. and then when he had to leave.
That doesn't portend good things. It means that she's very liberal and has a soft spot, has empathy and sympathy, and you got to knock that out of a kid.
Well, that's what we're trying to do. So the next movie we showed her was like the one about the gods with all the CGI where there's a lot of violence, and we're going to show her all the Game of Thrones. That's the next thing that we're going to show her.
Get Red State and watch Red State.
I haven't seen that. Is that Kevin Smith one? Is that good?
Oh, no. I was thinking of Red Dawn. Sorry. The remake of that. No,
that I definitely want to see, actually. But have you seen that?
No.
Oh, I actually am very excited to see that. So, but David, that brings us up to one of the real important aspects of your appearance today, which is, of course, because I'm married with child, I'm not allowed to go out and see movies because I'm not allowed to leave the house for more than 95 minutes at a time, except unless I'm, like, working. What movie would you suggest that we watch on Netflix or Amazon streaming or some other device?
I've been Amber and I have been watching our screeners. You know, we're both in SAG, and I'm in WGA, so we get screeners for.
I'm in those. I didn't get any screeners.
Do you vote?
You get a vote.
There you go. I'm a dues paying consistent voting member of the.
I think I vote.
Guild, so. No, you don't.
I'm pretty sure I do. I voted for the SAG-AFTRA thing. I vote for officers and whatnot. I think I do that.
No. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about voting for the categories.
Oh, no.
The reason why they'd they don't just let anybody vote, Sam.
Well, I understand. All right.
I'm an award-winning member. So we get a bunch of screeners, and so we've been watching those. So they're not necessarily in the theaters, or I'm sorry, not necessarily in Netflix yet. They're in the theaters, but I can tell you I've watched that I've liked of the current stuff.
Wait a second, you're going to recommend movies that I cannot see?
Well, you'll be able to see them
eventually,
pretty soon. Yeah.
All right.
Plus, I also don't believe that you're not allowed to go to movies. I think that's hyperbole, and I don't believe it.
You know what? I'll tell you something right now. Everybody in here is shaking their head. You don't understand. You don't understand what's going on.
I've never known you to be that weak-willed a person.
By the end of the day, I'm exhausted. And I can't make...
Oh, so this is a voluntary thing.
I'm exhausted. I can't make the argument. I use all my argumentation skills on this program.
Well, why don't you get up an hour early, just pick one day this week, and write stuff down. Write it down on an index card, and then when you get home, just give the index card
to her,
and then walk out the door.
You know, honestly,
and at the end of the index card, it says, I'll be back in 2.5 hours. I'm going down the street to watch.
I went to Skyfall. Okay, I can't remember what day it was. It was like about 3 or 4 weeks ago. It was a Thursday.
We took a tech day
on the show, and I went and I saw Skyfall, and it was so disappointing. It was horribly depressing because I had so much riding on that movie being good and taking the time. Did you see it?
I did. It was all right. I didn't think it was terrible.
I didn't think it was terrible. I just thought, like, you know, please. Why? It's so meta. Come up with a real villain.
Well, that's kind of an amalgamation of all their other villains in the last, 10 Bonds, I think. Or not 10, but maybe 7. But that's what it is. I mean, what do you want the villain to be, more arch, more comical?
It's just like the only threat to anybody was to M. You know, it's like, okay, you know what? It's, you know, the those people sitting on that committee had it right.
Wait a minute, but he destroys a third of the city.
Well, that's just a byproduct.
There are hundreds of innocent lives, if not lost, certainly at stake.
Well, no, we got to be careful not to do a spoiler, because I've actually given away the ending 3 times by mistake. We've had to cut it out. But the point is that, like, the committee saying, like, you know, why do we need MI1 or whatever it is? Why do we need you guys? And they're absolutely right. I mean, if they didn't exist, then that villain would have nothing to do.
Well, but it's just that villain, of course. But that's in that particular.
That's my point.
It's a good point, but it doesn't disclude other villains from popping up or needing to be.
Yeah, well, I would rather see that stuff rather than them making a lame case.
Oh, then go to the 19 other fucking Bond movies. How about that?
But I've seen those already, and they didn't do it like no, the one thing about that is, like, you can dip into that, any of those other movies, and you don't need to know anything.
So they mixed it up a little bit. It's an evolutionary process for the story, for the character.
And then you're back to basically, the series. It was just all about the series more than actually the, you know, Now we've re-energized the series. You know what? It's like, why did you just make me sit through the rebuilding year? Just take me to the year that you guys
went. I'm not going to argue for the merits of Skyfall. I mean, I enjoyed it. I didn't think it was the greatest thing ever. But, you know, as like a big, visual, fun popcorn movie, yeah, I liked it.
Yeah, it was
And
I was really pissed. I watched that.
I like the stuff that's not story, because I don't care. The story's never very, you know, important to me with those movies. I go to other movies for the story.
All right.
You know.
All right. Well, fair
also,
enough.
So, I saw it for free, so maybe that had.
Yeah. There you go.
I had taken my one opportunity and spent whatever it is now to go see a movie and get a popcorn and a water. It's crazy. The prices these days.
Tell me about it. Wait, you know, and if you have a kid, then it's like $15 to $20 an hour.
Yeah.
With the babysitter.
I just saw, where'd I go? I went and saw, up at the Brooklyn Heights Cinema. I went and saw Beast of Southern Wild. And they've refurbished that theater. It was under threat of being sold, and somebody bought it who loves movies and did a little work to it, so it's reopened. And went in, paid whatever it was, you know, $15, got a popcorn, got a bottle of water, and I went in, and it's the screen is roughly bigger than my TV, a little bit bigger than my TV, and it holds like 50 people, and you're like, what? But this is, come on.
Just becomes a screening room.
Yeah, not even. Screening room would be great. They have those bigger, you know.
Fancy chairs.
Yeah, this is, you know, I understand the premium on space in New York City and putting a theater in there. But, gee, I mean, come on, that's just like, what's the point?
Wow, well, wait a second. Cross comes out.
What happened?
Huh? Just we got it. Bingo.
What is it?
We got the exclusive.
When
have you ever said that before?
Nothing. Well, I don't know what I said.
Well, you came out strong against that theater renovation.
Look at it. Please try to push that to the front page of Drudge.
Yes. You're going to keep just harassing Nikki Fink with tips.
I like art house theaters. I want to support them, and I will continue to go back there. But
don't back off it now, buddy.
The movie I see will inform my choice of which theater I go to. If I know it's going to be a small screen, then I'll see a kind of more, less visually appealing, more talky kind of
right.
Dramatic movie, you know.
I know what you're saying there. Yes, you go to a theater to see the big screen. That's why you go these days, particularly with the size of TVs. I know. What do you got, like a 50-incher, right. I bet, right?
No, I got a projector, which is,
oh my God,
you know, roughly, that's not much more expensive than a TV. A projector is nothing.
You got to buy the wall space, though.
Yeah, well, I'm in Brooklyn. We have more wall space now than I did when I was in the East Village.
There you go, folks. There's another one.
Okay.
We got two things to send to Nikki Fink. Right now I've got four people cutting this stuff up as we speak. All right. So give me one from the screener batch so that in 6 months I can watch this on Netflix.
Of everything I've seen, I think my favorite.
Don't say Skyfall.
My favorite movie so far has been Silver Linings Playbook.
Silver Linings Playbook? I never even heard of it.
It's David O. Russell's new film. Oh. It's got Bradley Cooper, Jennifer Lawrence, Robert De Niro, a bunch of other people. It's good. It's really good. The acting is great. Really, the one thing I would say is I want to be careful here. The one thing I'd say is I wish I had known going into it that the last third of the movie was going to be a bit it became a little sweet and formulaically sweet and sappy, which I didn't expect. And so I had that kind of like, oh, really? You're going to do that? But not that it made me not enjoy it. But if I had known it was going to be that way, I wouldn't have that. I just would have been such a smooth, nice ride. But it was going, it was such a...
Oh, man, this is...
I believe you've gone to the well a bit.
Yeah, I know, but I'm telling you, this is going to be like a gold mine for me.
No, I don't. I think that gold is going to... That vein is going to run dry.
Fool's gold.
But yeah, I like the movie a lot. It's of the movies I've seen so far, it's been my favorite.
All right, we got it. Silver Linings, ladies and gentlemen.
Silver Linings Playbook.
That thing sounds like it's going to be on Netflix probably in like 6 weeks, I would say.
Possibly, yeah.
All right. Well, David, it was great to catch up with you. Why don't we go out and have a drink?
Definitely. I'm here for a couple weeks.
What are you going back and forth?
Right? 3 weeks.
Go ahead.
We have about a week more to shoot on Arrested when they as they're cutting it up frantically right now and seeing what they need and what's so we're probably going to have a little bit of reshooting, but
where do you shoot that in L.A.?
Yeah. But I'll be here for the most part. I think I'll be in L.A. for a week. You know, I try to spend as little time in L.A. as possible. I mean, I have family there and stuff, or extended family, or whatever you call, you know, in-law family. And that's where most of the work is, but I do try to stay here as much as possible. I'm not even in the city. I go upstate. But, yeah.
All right, great. All right, well, I'll be in touch.
Give me a call, whatever. We'll hang out. I'm here. I'm here till at least the end of January.
Okay. All right, good. I got to get it in before the kid comes.
When does she do?
March. First week of March.
Okay, good.
Boy.
Cool. Nice.
Oh, yeah, that's what I wanted to ask. I've been meaning to do this with all our guests, actually, and I forgot to do it with our guest today. One suggestion for a name. Still have not come up with one.
Gator?
Gator. I love it. In the mix.
All right.
David Cross, thank you so much for joining us.
All right, man. Thanks.
All right. Take
good
it
talking.
Easy. Bye. Now, ladies and gentlemen, we got a Jimmy Reefer Cake song of the week. It seems like Jimmy Reefer Cake is, you know, 2013 starting out strong after railing on Matt for not including him in the best of 2012. I guess without having listened to the best of the 2012 to know that he was actually included in it. But here it is, Jimmy Reefer Cake song. What's the name, Matt?
It's called I Want My 2K.
I Want My 2K.
I want my 2K. Orange man smells of cigarettes and whiskey. He greets us all with a friendly obscenity. He commences with the sodomy again. They're working that sleight of hand, screwing us all again. I want my 2K. Payroll tax on the working class backs again. I want my 2K. The light-skinned black man who we elected president, you better let him know that the working class presents it. Our tax is going up no matter how he presents it again. Oh, he's working that sleight of hand, screwing us all again. I want my 2K. It's the payroll tax on the working class backs again.
Okay. I thought that was okay. Not necessarily the I don't necessarily agree with the politics behind it, and it wasn't necessarily his biggest, most produced song, but got to give it for Jimmy Reef Cake, very timely. I actually think that, frankly, we should continue to pay into Social Security, and in fact, the cap should be lifted, and we need other forms of stimulus from the government. I mean, you know, this is a this whole notion where we're undertaxed as a country. There's just no two ways about it. And taxes should go up more than they are now on the wealthy. And I'm not even frankly convinced that in a lot of cases that we shouldn't have dropped down to the Clinton rates, you know, closer to 100,000 even, frankly. But the big fight is going to be coming up when they try and cut Social Security in the coming weeks. I guess it's a freebie Friday. We'll go a little bit long.
How could it not be, you know?
Right.
I mean,
I understand. Let's go to the IMs, ladies and gentlemen. Bartleby 141, Obama has said that he will not engage in brinksmanship with the GOP over the debt limit. While I applaud him and dearly want to believe him, I don't understand how he can avoid it. Is there some secret weapon up his sleeve that we're not aware of? Also, I don't think his performance in the fiscal cliff negotiation bodes well. Look, what they're doing is, we'll talk about the platinum coin next week. What they're doing is, I think, they're basically saying, we're going to draw the line on the debt ceiling. We're not going to play around with you on that. But when it comes to the sequester, we'll give you everything you want. That to me, you know, it's just from reading, you know, that's just the sense I get. It's going to be the sequester where they give everything away, not the debt ceiling, so that it can appear strong in some fashion. I don't know. I don't know if I buy any of it. This is wonderful, though. This is actually, this is quite a story. On Wednesday, that was 2 days ago, the Obama administration said they're going to basically create an easier process for undocumented immigrants who are relatives to American citizens to apply for permanent residency in the United States. So this is basically the executive branch basically just looking over at immigration services and saying, we're going to come up with a better system of doing this. We already have it in place. We're just going to come up with a better system to do it. The Department of Homeland Security issued the new rule, wanted to reduce the amount of time families spend apart while relatives seek to obtain legal status. The change is set to take place on March 4th, and approved applicants will be required to return to their native country to retrieve their visas. So if you want to be part of the process, you got to get back in line. You got to go back to your country, get the visa, come in so that you come in a very documented fashion. This is the funny part about this story. That should be applauded. Good. Anything we can do to make it easier to keep families together, the better. On Fox Latino, the Fox News, the Fox, you know, has a Latino version. I think most of the news outlets do. They had the headline, U.S. eases path to legalization for some immigrants, keeps families together. And it has a picture, a big picture, of some activists. And I think it was one representative from Congress, I think it was Gutierrez, in front of a banner that says, stop separating our families. All right, this was a rally in 2011. And this is the way that Fox Latino News reported it. However, over on FoxNation.com, which is the, I guess, the white Fox News, the Republican Fox News, they reported it, the same story, linking to the same story. This was some piece in the LA Times with Obama begins amnesty push and a picture of immigration services cops walking around a half dozen what appears to be Latin American guys all cuffed sitting on a ground, which apparently was the same picture that Fox Nation used when the Obama administration decided to halt deportations of undocumented children. So I would say that the Republican project to reform their perspective on immigration has not quite up on their propaganda division, at least on the white side. Unbelievable. These guys, just, they're unbelievable. They're still feeding this line to their minions. If they're immigrants, they belong in cuffs. Let's go back to the IMR cheese. Would you be able to speak to the effect of requiring gun owners to obtain liability insurance? Would this be a positive initiative or merely a distraction in your view? Great show, Sam. Have a great weekend. But I think the value of requiring gun owners to obtain liability insurance is that you'd have another level of essentially what constitutes a background check. You know, it seems to me there may be some value in pushing something like this because then you get a whole corporate industry behind it and there's money to be made there for them. I don't know if it would pass any type of muster with the Supreme Court, but you know, anything that increases background checks, I think, and makes it more difficult to purchase a firearm is, I think, a healthy thing. And I think, you know, if it's not terribly expensive, then I don't think you're really infringing upon anybody's so-called rights. 1001. Barney Frank just declared for the open Massachusetts Senate seat. He did?
No, he didn't say he's going to run. He said he wants to be appointed to finish the term.
Oh.
But that's still a big deal. He said he wants to be involved in the fiscal and budget stuff that's going to happen over the next couple of months.
Doesn't this hurt Ed Markey's chances defeating Scott Brown in the general election? I don't see why that would.
Well, if he was going to run, maybe it's just a misunderstanding.
Yeah, I mean, if he's seated there as the interim senator, no, I think it's going to help because, you know, Barney Frank is fairly popular and, you know, I think it's going to help. I don't see how it would hurt, but maybe I'm wrong. Juan Miguel. Juliet Gerhardt from the opera Lohengrin by Richard Wagner or Felix Mendelssohn's Wedding Sea in March in 1842. Wow, Sam, TMI on the kid thing, ambient sex, really? David Cross is confusing me. Ask about increasingly poor decisions of Todd Margaret, please. Oh, sorry. Oh, my God. No more Skyfall talk, please. Jay Tingle. Here Comes the Bride is actually called Bridal Chorus and was composed by Wagner. This is a bit of trivia from the movie Whore. Ask David Cross if he ever hangs out with his wife's uncle, Larry. I'm a big fan. How can you go on the air and talk about Skyfall without revealing how it ends? Skyfall is James Bond's sled. Cross's rendition of Eye of the Tiger was a cedar wedding highlight. Lawyer Matthew was at the wedding, and David Cross sang Eye of the Tiger, backed by Yo La Tango at my wedding. Dryson9, I'm reading that people who make $50,000 a year will be paying an additional $1,000 in taxes in 2013. Does this regress over time, or is this indefinite? That what you're reading is the extra $1,000, let's see. Your payroll tax will go up 4 percentage points. Yeah, that sounds about right. That sounds about right. Never mind. Jimmy Reefer Cakes cleared that up for me. Hurray, Pop Phil. Sam, explain you're having a second child in hopes that you'll be able to master him since your daughter owns you. Sam, we need more back from taxes than an investment into a bank or oil company so they can charge the working class more. I get pissed over the fact that Swiss will enforce U.S. law and bring criminal actions against people in a bank before we will. Sorry about the triples today, Sam. When you and Cliff had a conversation about the awareness of medical need, imagine being a teen diabetic and not being able to get a job because of it, much less medical insurance. And add that to even after Americans Disability Act, you get your job maybe, but you pay so much for insurance, you could barely afford the treatment of your diabetes. Indeed. Into architecture. Cliff, there are no bad people. We are all morally ambivalent. We try to do things which can morally quantified as bad or more good than other things. I think that's probably true. Dradman Thieves. Okay, Sam, since David's not coming up with one you can stream, I'll recommend Breaking the Taboo, which was released on YouTube a few weeks ago. It's by a young Brazilian director and very interesting global look at alternatives to war on drugs. Personally, I think the original version of this film released in 2011 was better, but the revamped international version is pretty good too, and it's narrated by Morgan Freeman, and it's free. Oh, well, thank you.
Do you watch Doctor Who?
I don't.
You should.
I know.
It's a good show. It's on Netflix.
I know.
I got into it recently. It's very hard to put it down.
Sugar High 777, did you see the story that Glenn Beck tried to buy Current TV and they wouldn't sell it to protect their legacy? He was going on and on about how Vice President could prefer anti-American Al Jazeera to obviously pro-American Glenn Beck. Also, Dogtooth. I was so close to Dogtooth this week, I couldn't even tell you. Yes, I did hear about that. He didn't buy it. He didn't sell it to Glenn Beck. Also, you know what? Well, yes, I think he just rejected it out of hand. But, you know, good for him. Zach Punk, As It Happens, Kill Your Darlings was directed by my stepbrother, John Krokodikidis. I saw an early cut, and it's brilliant. Oh, great. I love it. Congratulate your stepbrother. Jeff Butrus, Best Jimmy Reefer Cakes Ever. Bob Flave, here's a movie recommendation with David Cross. And since it's been out since 2007, I'm sure it's on Netflix. The Grand, a very funny poker movie. C. McDonald, great banter with Cross. Thanks. But wow, who could have written those new scripts? A Mensa committee? I know. That does sound... It'll be interesting to see it. I mean, I think there was a movie, and I can't remember what it was called. And I can't remember who the director was now. But it actually had four quadrants on the screen. It was shot in digital video about 10 years ago out in L.A. I was actually in it because they passed me. I walked into it by mistake. It was a digital video film very early on when those were coming out. And there's four screens. I cannot remember the name of the guy. Somebody will remind me. And they basically followed like 1 hour. It was 90 minutes all in real time. And they shot people going through a 90-minute period of time, and each one was four stories that were happening simultaneously and distinct from each other. It was like something like 2000 or something like that. I can't remember what it was. But that's the only thing that could sort of like in some way be equivalent. I mean, basically talking about the same period of time, but you're just following the other characters out. Time code. Thank you, Jay Tingle. Nozini, when you said Wednesday, that was 2 days ago, I heard the breaking news update song. Ah, yes, indeed. And the final I am of the day, folks. Well, wait a second. Should we get to one other story?
Why not? We're really not that much over quite yet for a casual Friday.
Did we have any sound? Well,
no, we don't have any sound for today.
Let's wrap it up. We'll go with the final I am of the day.
People were spoiled with those best of shows anyway.
Yeah. Zach Punk says it's pronounced Crow-key-dus. That's his brother-in-law. That's his stepbrother. All right, let's go one more. One, I concur, Doctor Who is amazing. Your assistant's comment, it's Matt, about Doctor Who reminds me of the ending of the Battlestar Galactica skit in Portlandia. Oh, wait, I spoiled it. Also, two, ask him if he thinks the 12th Doctor will be a woman. Who knows? I don't even know what that means. Oh, we should also say, next week, this is pretty exciting, Matt is going to Las Vegas on Sunday. First time in Vegas.
Second time in Vegas.
What?
I've been to Vegas before.
You have?
Yeah. A while ago, but I've been.
You're kidding.
No.
I didn't know that.
Oh.
Well, that's why I suggested you go. I thought you'd never been.
I've been there once before.
I've never been.
Boom. Breaking news. Matt's not going to be going to Vegas. Michael's going to Vegas.
Michael's only here for half of the 2012 year that that award was up for.
All right, well, fair enough.
I don't know. I'm totally a supporter of you going to Vegas.
I just thought you had never been to Vegas. I thought this would be a big deal for you.
It is a big deal.
But I thought it would be a big deal because I thought you'd never been to
Vegas. Anywhere.
I could see a recurring premise here where Matt just weasels his way. He's just, oh, no, yeah, I've been to Italy before.
Cool. Vegas is the one place I've ever... Vegas is the one place I've ever been to that's on the west of this, the west side of this.
Well, I thought this was a big deal. I thought this was the first time that you were going to, over to the west. I didn't realize that the one place you're going is the one place you've been.
Well, I've been to Vegas before.
Well, I would have waited until we got like an LA trip or something.
But,
oh, jeez. So, oh my God! Well, this is not as exciting for me now.
Well, I've been to New Orleans, but that's not. I don't consider that the west side of the country.
Well, the reason you don't is because it isn't.
That's true. Exactly. That's what I'm saying. That's exactly what I'm saying.
I don't consider New Orleans part of the.
Well, let's continue talking about why I'm going.
Well, I thought this was
more
exciting.
I'm not going for me. I'm not going for me though.
Well, I know, but I thought it. I mean, that was the thing that made the whole thing more exciting for me was that I thought this was the first time you were going.
Well, I can pretend that's
the only other place.
There's
you've
a
been.
Reason that the soundboard is not going to work on Monday and Tuesday, and that right. was because you've never been to Vegas.
I've told you I've been to Vegas before. We were speaking about this before.
Maybe I thought you said I've never been to Vegas. Well, nevertheless, Matt is going to Vegas to represent the show. The podcast awards are being announced at what convention is it?
It's the New Media Expo.
The New Media Expo. Well, in that case. You better spend your time finding out all new media stuff that we can use.
Oh, I plan on going to all the
seminars.
Yeah, that's what I plan on doing.
And go to the booths. They probably have booths there, like find new streaming technologies.
Dude, you don't even gotta tell me. That's exactly what I was planning on doing.
And swag. They're gonna have tons of these thumb drives.
I'll get
they're
you
gonna
plenty. Don't
out.
Worry.
I want a tons of thumb drives. And the balls you squeeze to get your increase your
I will get you
hotel room, toothpaste,
yeah,
shampoo.
I will take everything.
Yeah, I want I want a bathrobe. All right, so he's going.
Seriously, if you could actually get bathrobes, that would be amazing.
All three of us could just sit
he's
here
just
in our
travel. He's just going to travel with an empty suitcase. And Matt's going to call in. When are they going to announce the podcast awards?
The podcast awards will be announced at 6:30 Vegas time on Monday night.
Okay, so you'll be able to tell us Tuesday. But you're flying back, right, Tuesday?
I'm flying back Tuesday, but I can call in at the very top of the show.
Okay, great. So we'll know if we won. If you don't hear from him on Tuesday, then you know we didn't win. But on Monday, you'll call in, give us an update, tell us what you're doing there.
I think my sources say we definitely won.
No, what? You don't know that.
I don't know that, but my sources, myself, I'm feeling pretty confident.
You're feeling confident, but that's not a source. That's just you.
My source is me.
Huh. All right, well, so
you
folks
have to accept the award somehow?
Yeah, do you go up and accept the award?
Yeah, I believe Leo Laporte, the famous.
Leo Laporte, he's very famous.
Laporte, okay, that's how you say his last name. Yes, he's a very well-known person in the tech world. He's going to be hosting the event.
Wow.
You will go up if the inside sources are correct in your head, and you'll take the award.
I believe so,
That's big. That's big.
That's big. You better do a good job.
I think it
that.
Might be streaming, too. I'll let you all know.
All right, great. All right, well, have a great weekend, everybody. Matt, safe travels to Las Vegas, I guess, for the second time.
Matt, I hope you do not get to Vegas. I hope you're stuck on the tarmac.
See you Monday, folks. Have a great weekend.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. But finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know. Where you don't get paid for the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I get somehow lost but dry between the 101 and the 5. Do you know how? shifted in.